My name is Turkish. Funny name for an Englishman, I know. My parents-to-be were on the same plane when it crashed. That's how they met. They named me after the name of the plane. Not many people are named after a plane crash.
Hello and welcome to the Dead Letter Movie Podcast. This is episode 128, recorded July 13th, 2025. I'm Tim.
I'm Andrew.
And as promised in not one but two previous episodes, we are continuing our monthly at least accountability series, movies from 2000 in 25 minutes.
25 years, 25 minutes. Yep.
With Guy Ritchie's Snatch.
Yeah, this was new for both of us, right?
Yeah. I had somehow never seen this one before. Just one of those I hadn't got to.
I'd caught bits and pieces of it on TV from time to time, but not a whole lot. Only a little bit, but
I actually hadn't. So right. I knew almost nothing about this. I knew this movie existed and like some of the cast who were in it, but basically nothing else. So I was effectively, you know, going in cold.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew that it was a crime movie. I knew it was funny. Mm-hmm. And I knew it was kind of stylistic and like kind of cool. But yeah. That was about all I knew too. So yeah. And but I hadn't seen like any of this in, you know, it's the better part of 20 years, so I would say. So I do remember this being on Comedy Central, I think, a surprising amount, but
I'd believe that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So all right, Tim. What does the back of the box tell us?
All right, here we go. When jewel thief Frankie Fourfingers, Benicio del Toro, takes a slight detour to London en route to delivering a huge stolen diamond to his boss in New York, he unwittingly sets off an avalanche of sinister and comic events that wind their way through the rough and tumble worlds of bare-knuckle boxing, Irish gypsies, pawn shops, pig farming, and a stray dog. Snatch, Guy Ritchie's brilliant follow-up to his critically acclaimed Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, exposes us to his hip and helter-skelter view of London's gangster underbelly. Ritchie's characteristic fast pace and constantly twisting story features a madcap ensemble cast of larger-than-life characters, including Jason Statham, an unlicensed boxing promoter, Stephen Graham, his bumbling sidekick, Alan Ford, the local underworld kingpin, Dennis Farina, Frankie's no-nonsense boss, Vinnie Jones, a legendary thug, Rade Shebedja, a psycho double-crossing Russian, and Brad Pitt in a hilarious turn as a fast-talking gypsy bare-knuckle boxer.
Yep. All right. So, 25 years, 25 minutes, getting it on the clock, and boop. Okay. So, all right, before we get to going, I'm going to have us use not the language that the movie uses, because in 2000 these were okay terms, hence the back of the box.
Yes.
And I'm going, but however, Roma does not exactly qualify with the people in this movie.
It does not.
I'm going to go with what Wikipedia refers to them as, and that is travelers. And cool, I'm down with that. Okay. So yes, we will refer to our Irish-ish folks as travelers. So yep. Okay. So with that in mind, let's continue. So I had not seen Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels either, but I was aware of it. And I think I had the soundtrack to it for some reason.
Huh, weird.
Yeah, I think someone made a copy of it for me and I enjoyed like I Want to Be Your Dog from the Stooges is on it. And I think that was my first exposure to that song, surprisingly. I'd only listened to Raw Power before. So yeah, but this is Guy Ritchie's second movie. It is the second of three, or no, second of six movies he's done with Jason Statham. Matthew Vaughn and Jason Statham have done three things together. And so, yeah, this is kind of coming from that world. I don't remember much about early 2000s action movies so much. But when it came to action comedies, this and Lock, Stock, I do remember making a big splash.
Yeah. Like this is really, really popular when, you know, you and I both were in college, mm-hmm. for instance, and you know, was a few years old at that point. Not many, but a few. But yeah, somehow just never ended up watching this one. I knew a lot of people liked it, or you know, at least had the poster, or you know, one thing or another. Really didn't know much about it, and you know, kind of had a sense of, about you know, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, but hadn't seen that either.
Yeah, I do remember this being both of them being rented at the video store, The thing I find interesting about this is that I don't remember women renting this movie. But
That's somehow not too surprising.
does not this is a very bro movie. But it's
Yeah.
what's interesting to what's funny, and this is I don't really have like an this is just an observation. I don't really have an opinion here. So this was the year after Fight Club, and but women rented Fight Club. So
Yeah. Which
and
makes a
it
lot of sense.
yep. But the funny thing is like comparing this with Fight Club is if there so there are three movies around this time that are just kind of like in common with each other and have Brad Pitt. And so there's Fight Club and this, which I mean like really just the fighting is the only thing in common. But you know that we see him, you know, bare knuckle fight a few people in both movies. And then the year after this is when Ocean's 11 comes out, which is like a quippy, funny heist movie. And so this isn't a heist. I mean, I guess there's a heist
Sort
element
of.
to it.
Yeah,
Yeah, there's,
kind of.
yeah,
Yeah.
because there's just some failed heists that happen.
Yeah, more than one, and one
Yeah.
that was arguably successful, but yeah.
Yeah. So it's just interesting when you kind of think of those three movies. It's just interesting. And then Benicio del Toro apparently has three movies that came out at this time too, because you know we just had Traffic, which we covered last, and then he's in this for not that much of it, but then he's also in The Way of the Gun that came out this year too. So he was a busy guy, Benicio. And yeah, this is our third Benicio del Toro movie we've talked about this year, along with Finishing Scheme and Traffic. So
It's true.
we're talking about him a lot. But yeah, so this is a big ensemble movie with a lot of, you know, British actors, some of which have gone on to do a lot of neat things. Jason Statham, I think this and Lock, Stock very much solidified him as that guy you go for these things. And yeah.
And he did a lot of other, kind of similar things of, varying quality and prestige around this time, like the remake of The Italian Job I really
Right. Yep.
enjoyed that he's in.
Yep.
So there's that. So in relation to previous movie that we talked about, Primer, this movie is also really complicated. There's a lot going on, but not nearly to the same degree. Like
Yeah.
it's twisty and turny and convoluted, but it takes you with them every step of the way, and it makes it entertaining and engaging and funny, and you can't help but laugh at the misfortune of almost any of these characters at different points.
It is a dark comedy, but it is very funny.
Yeah, I laughed a lot.
I did too. I found it very, very entertaining in that regard. Yeah, I found myself, you know, Vinnie Jones is a very imposing man, which is why he does what he does. But I remember I was watching this, I was thinking about like the first time that I had really encountered him that I remembered him. Like I'd probably seen him in other things and just didn't remember. But he is in Midnight Meat Train.
What a
Where he,
title.
oh yeah, it's based off of Clive Barker story, I believe, and that's so they him and Bradley Cooper, and he is the big heavy of Midnight Meat Train. He is the butcher of that meat
Okay,
train, if you will.
yeah, sure.
Yeah, and so like that was my first big Vinnie Jones exposure, and I found that pretty. It was nice to see him be like, you know, menacing in a different way.
Yeah,
Here, yeah.
and at times he is in the way you would expect him to be, but he also has some scenes where he does something, very different but to similar effect in this movie, and that was a lot of fun to watch.
Right. And I guess he's a footballer.
Was, yeah.
So yeah. But yeah, no, I found this enjoyable. This is, you know, it's like a fun, I wouldn't call it a crime romp, but it's got a lot of neat things.
Romp is near the mark.
It has got that, I wouldn't exactly call it light, but it is kind of
No.
it is kind of like that you could watch this in the Sunday afternoon and you know it'd
You
be
could.
fine.
It's very, very silly, at the same time that it's kind of dark and violent. Really quite violent.
But it's not like I'm trying to think of like where to put it's not as violent as like a Tarantino movie, but
No, not quite. Close in spots, but
Right. I mean, there's a lot of being threatened to being fed to pigs. So there is that. But like in a fair amount of gun violence, but in a silly sort of way, which you could argue is more irresponsible, but at the same time, like there's consequences to the irresponsibility. So
There
in
really,
this
really
movie,
is, and yeah, a lot of it is sort of, implied off screen, where it's like, okay, you see the gun firing, but you do not actually see the effects, and that's played to great comedic payoff, and
And so like it's not like like when you watch like True Lies, the like gun violence in True Lies is like not particularly violent, but there isn't really like, I don't know, there's something more cartoonish about that than in this, even though this is still kind of cartoony. But yeah, so how do, so now that we've now let's compare this to the previous Brad Pitt performance that we had covered, because those were both times where Brad Pitt was being different than the usual
Really,
Brad Pitt.
really different. So yeah, not like you said, very much not the usual Brad Pitt. Underneath the character here is kind of similar to a lot of others that he has played. But on the surface level, really, really fast talking with something resembling an Irish accent, like Jason Statham in the narration says, they're not Irish, they're not English, not really sure here exactly. But it's really, really something, in terms of how he interacts with other characters. Going in similar directions and making similar points, but going about it in a very different way.
And that's kind of fun to watch.
It,
And
yeah.
I forgot that there was like this time where he'd kind of found his lane, kind of, but he would sort of like stretch out of it a lot. Because, like before when I was talking about how, in 95, he branches out from doing the like heartthrob thing to doing, 12 Monkeys. And here he's still got, I mean, he's getting on in years, but I mean, he's still got heartthrob thing going on for him. I mean, like, he'd just done Hot Fight Club the year before. And so like, it's fun to see him like, kind of like veer away from that slightly. I mean, he's still got heartthrob thing going on here, but he's also got goofball going on here, which I think is something that he would kind of lean into with the Oceans movies from there.
I mean, there's a definite air of goofball here, but as we learn, later in the movie, it's like, okay, that's
It's
kind of
calculated.
it's calculated. Like, he's clearly having fun doing it, and so is the character, but underestimate him. Take that as being the entirety of the character at your own peril, because there is so much more going on under the surface. Like, yeah, that's there. But the character Mickey, is okay. Yeah, he's deliberately being goofy and having fun. That's kind of his sense of humor, but that's on top of everything else.
Exactly. I find that kind of like, I don't know if it's exactly subversive, but it's the kind of thing where people aren't taking him seriously, but the audience don't take him too seriously. And that is, that's the point that's being made. I do find some of the portrayal of travelers, like maybe a little gross in this time. And that's one of the things that maybe doesn't age very well, but it isn't like totally disrespectful because of how things pan out. But at the same time, there is kind of like an otherness to them that still kind of permeates.
Yeah, there is a bit. It's weird and a little uncomfortable, and this is something I think we as a society are still kind of wrestling with.
As it turns out. I don't know if that's ever gonna stop. We might get better at it. I'll give us that. But yeah, it's like there's that little stuff. I mean, there's like a few things that, come off a little dated here. But it isn't as bad as like a 1980s comedy where every time I put one of those in, I get a little anxious to be like, what's gonna be the thing that didn't age well here? And there isn't, it doesn't get that egregious. It's just like a few little things that, some of that I chalk off to Britain being different from here. And, some of it is, other stuff. The thing I find kind of funny is just the way these guys all interact with each other stays about the same, which I don't know if that is what would happen in real life. I like and that and but that that's okay. Like I think that that's generally fine. Like I kind of from what I understand of British culture is that there is kind of like a little bit of like putting on things when you're
there really is. You know, there's a lot more of a sort of a dry witticism and a sarcasm and yeah, it's you know, taking the piss, as they call it,
yeah,
you know,
that's what
of, you know, making fun of each other, you know, even when it's off color and it's understood that it's not necessarily intended as a, you know, serious slur or anything.
Right. It's, yeah. Yeah. And so like that was I like that. Like, I don't know how true to life that is, but I also don't think this movie is particularly trying to do anything true to life.
Yeah.
I think it's just trying to make a fun little crime movie and, you know, it succeeds there.
Yep.
I did not expect a dog movie.
No, neither did I.
Even though the dog is on the cover, you know, like I just did not expect the dog to be an important plot thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it isn't like a dog's life. It's not like that far or like Incredible Journey, but it was more of a dog movie than I expected. And apparently I did listen to the DVD commentary, which is interesting because Matthew Vaughn and Guy Ritchie like are talking and kind of, I'm not going to say make fun of the process while they're going at it, but they just every so often like Vaughn or Guy Ritchie will be like, and this is the part where Vaughn needs to tell us something funny or, you know, like we're supposed to like, you know, they'll be very meta about it. Just like, this is what like we're supposed to be telling these, we're supposed to be talking about this right now. And then they would always make these reference to the men in suits are telling us that we need to talk about the budget and the men in suit are wondering how the casting happened. And like, they'll bring that up as if like, it was probably like the second one, like if they did one for Lock, Stock or not, like it was probably very an early one for them. And so like the idea of audio commentary, despite being, you know, let's see, at that point 16 years old as a concept would have been like but you have to be into that stuff in order to be aware of it. But it's more of a technical one that, well, actually that's not 100% true. It's fairly technical, but it's also kind of, I don't know, it's just like a couple of guys taking the piss, if you will, as they, you know, as they talk over things. But you know, it's one of the things that they brought up in the commentary was the troubles with the dog. The dog was quite a misbehavior.
I mean, it's like the old adage, you know. Kids and animals. Well, not really kids in this movie so much, apart from that one scene. But there are dogs.
Yep. Everyone got bitten and assaulted or something by that dog in some way, shape or form during it all. And at one point they talk about, and this was the last scene we did with this dog because at that point it had gotten to a bad place. And so we got a different, more docile dog and just put makeup on it.
Wow.
And, yeah. and what the makeup artist was said, like, this is the, but they said it was one of the better behaved things because you could put a black eye, give it a black eye every day and it wouldn't be mad at you or something like that. Yeah. And I'm curious to rewatch it now that I know that it's going to change how I feel about the dog. But
So this movie has an almost frenetic pacing to it. Things really move quickly from one scene to another. So if, unless you're really looking for that, odds are you're not going to notice.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, there's a bunch of little quick things. When I think about movies that have a lot of timelines going on, I think this is actually a pretty expertly balanced way of doing it.
Yeah.
All of the stories really feed into each other really well. And also I feel like all the characters have, unlike some places where, you know, I watch a lot of Robert Altman movies and I'm like been kind of a fan of his stuff for a long time. And I like ensemble movies usually a lot, but sometimes you don't get a lot of character development or you don't get a lot of, you know, I would say that at the end of the day, this is Jason Statham's movie. Because I mean the movie, there's the frame that happens with the beginning and the end, which was added later when they made the movie, and then while they were editing it, were realizing they needed something there. And so they added that at the end, but which makes me wonder if that wasn't there, if I would still think of this as his movie. But I mean, he's also the guy narrating and stuff. So
yeah, I think mostly I probably would, you know, like you said, due to the narration, but I'm not sure it would land quite the same way. I do really like how, you know, all the things are pretty clearly connected.
Very connected. No one is.
Yeah. And it's, you know, if you came in at the end, it wouldn't necessarily be obvious. Like it all ties up pretty nicely, but okay. You know, we have the opening sequence where there's the diamond heist and there's that. And so, okay, so we draw the line from that to, okay, here's this thing that's connected to it, but has also got its own things going on. And then there, from that, here are these other pieces that are connected to that in these ways. And it does that until we get, there are four or five different things going. And one of my favorite bits in the whole movie is where they first really all collide in that scene on the street. There are, multiple car crashes, milk is spilled.
Yeah, so the Boris the so apparently so they go to get a new gun from Boris the Blade at one point, but Boris had already been hit by a car at that point. But apparently they didn't film that in sequence yet, so it didn't occur to them that, oh, Boris probably should be like limping here. But
But I love that actor's portrayal in that scene where he shows up back at his own house. It's like he's roughed up quite a bit, but he's got this look in his eyes, like he's determined, and it just is basically entirely uninterested in Jason Statham and Tommy at that point. Just
Just running on.
nope, just doing his own thing. It's like you're in my way. There's this almost subconscious maneuver to okay, get you out of the way there. I'm and he's mad and clearly kind of demented and a little bit loopy here. I love
Well, yeah,
that.
I mean, just
Yeah.
all sorts of
He's just
things.
been hit by a car and run over and this and the other and
Yeah, absolutely. It's the guy's been through a lot, and he is one of the funnier characters in the film, I would say. I mean, everyone's pretty funny, but that, like, this is kind of like what I mean. Like, unlike a lot of ensemble things, you kind of get a good sense of who each character is. I'm not saying they necessarily all get development per se, because it's, at the end of the day, it's still an under 2 hour movie. But everyone kind of gets like has their own plight. They have their own little arc going on. Some of that ends better for others. Maybe not Benicio del Toro, but he's in the movie a pretty short amount of time. And by the way, whenever the two times they have the Las Vegas cutaway of him like gambling and stuff, could not help but think of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. He's even like wearing a similar Dr. Gonzo shirt, like very similar to how he looked in Fear and Loathing, which was not called out in the commentary, but I wondered when I watched it. But yeah, this is like, it's got a great amount. Like, I think everyone in the cast is well cast. Like, I think everyone pulls it very well, and everyone is quite good at bringing what they have to the table and doing well with it. Even like the two twin girls are just also really funny. Like, even like, if what I mean, like, not like I don't expect them to be good, but like, even people with like little roles like that are doing really well, and
Yeah, they only had
they're
like three, four
memorable.
lines.
Yeah, but I mean, they're partly memorable because they're twins. But I mean, like, but they're memorable, and everyone does something like, they have their own little thing. Like, which I even like the woman who's running the betting, like the bookie thing, where it's just all bets are off. Like, even she is like an interesting performance.
Yeah,
Like,
and she's
literally,
only in that one scene.
yeah, and she's hilarious. Like, yeah, it's just.
Everybody clearly understands the movie that they're making and what to do with it. It's
And that might be this might be one of those examples where like where the sophomore element of something actually helps, because we always say that like the sophomore slump, it's like you have it's because you have your whole life to make your first movie. You don't always have that the second time around. It's like, this is why like sophomore albums by bands are usually not as good as the first one or something. And so like, now you and I haven't seen Lock, Stock, but I do wonder, Lock, Stock being out there in the ether, everyone knew what was happening, so everyone was able to be on the same page and be able to, contribute in a manner that was going to like totally fit in with all that. Just a thing I wonder. And oh, and I couldn't help but think of Spinal Tap during one of the like the metal detector moments, or when where he hides the diamond. Like, I couldn't help but think of that. Literally a thing I wrote to, like, can't help but think of Spinal Tap here.
Wonder if he used tinfoil.
I also think that it's funny that most of it is in the daytime. With like all this done is done mostly done in broad daylight. There's only like really one or two sequences at night, in which for a crime movie, I think is kind of unusual. I think when you're usually watching a crime movie, things are often happening at night because of, all the reasons you do things at night. But the fact that everything's so brightly lit, it kind of adds to the brightness of the humor. So like, I don't know, that was like a thought I had when I was watching this. I just read like, oh, this is someone else would have done this differently, and I kind of like that. So
Yeah.
yeah. But yeah, I don't have a whole lot that doesn't really work for me here. It does feel like a 2000s movie. Oh, I do think the cast of characters thing. In 2000, it wouldn't have bothered me, but now it comes off a little dated and maybe a little unnecessary, as you could have just done those little things
Yeah.
as we progress through the movie.
Yeah, that would have been one way to do it. But yeah, I honestly liked that in the opening title sequence. That really worked for me. It's like, here's, dramatis personae, and we're just gonna lay this out here, and there's, the kind of, jazz funk kind of thing going underneath with the waka chicka wakas and
Oh, I do think the soundtrack is really fun too.
But I actually really like that opening sequence too. It's like that worked for me. So there's a, clear example of the stylization at play here.
Absolutely. Yeah, the way this movie is edited and such is very of its time, but also very, that's that freneticness that you were talking about. A lot of split screen, which we don't really do as much now, because I guess we kind of think of it as kind of hokey now, I suppose, but it doesn't come off as hokey
No, it
here.
really doesn't, because that stylized nature of this, harkens back to, similar things from like the 70s, which is where you get that, the funk kind of stuff going in the soundtrack, and it's like that all really, really worked for me. And where there was split screen, yeah, there was some here and there, I don't know, three, four times over the course of the movie. Didn't come off hokey, was certainly not overused in the spots where they did use it. It made sense. And you could have done that, cutting back and forth between the two, and it would have worked okay, but it wouldn't have played into the style and the vibe here in the same way.
Now I'm kind of curious what a 70s gangster version of this would look like. Yeah, like who would even be in it? Like I'm trying, I can't even, like, maybe Robert Shaw.
Yeah, maybe.
Like I'm trying to think of like 70s British guys that had this kind of edge to them. Now that'll be a fun pre-make thought experiment for me later. But yeah, so yeah, do you have anything that didn't quite like gel for you?
No, not really. So, some of the violent bits, for oh,
Hey,
so
how about that?
hey.
You have to finish where we're going, and then we'll do final thoughts.
Mostly that work, there are bits, the local, London sort of underground crime boss guy. It's like, okay, there are bits where we are clearly shown, just how bad a guy he is that have nothing to do with the pig farm. Those bits I found, ooh, that's uncomfortable. And it works. It tells me who this character is, but also still made me uncomfortable in ways that the rest of the movie really didn't.
Yeah, that might be a 2000 thing.
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah, I can't help but think that we had that kind of edginess going on at that point. So, yeah. All right, but yeah, what's your final thoughts? Great. What do you think?
Final thoughts. I really enjoyed this. I had a good time watching it. Like I said, I laughed a lot. There's basically nothing that doesn't work. The script is tight. The cast are really, really on assignment. This gets an A.
Yeah, all right. I think I'm gonna go B plus. I really enjoy it. This is not the kind of movie I'm totally into usually, so like that caveat. I do think it's well made. It's very well crafted, though. I do kind of want to watch it with Lock. I do kind of want to check out Lock Stock to see how it compares. I am also curious of if there was any influence with this and the Oceans movies. I know Soderbergh had made, other heist, at least one other heist movie before he made that, so that may not have been anything at all, but it is a curiosity that I have,
I feel like
especially with the
they,
Brad Pitt of it too.
yeah, for sure. I feel like they had similar influences, each of them. I don't know if the one necessarily influenced the other in any way, but they come from similar places.
Yeah, exactly. And so maybe that was just what was in the time, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, but
Well,
that's interesting.
some of that, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed this. This was a fun watch. Don't know if I'll get, I mean, I'm not averse to watching it again, but
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not something I'm likely to revisit often, but now and then, sure.
But yeah. All right. So we haven't decided officially what our next option is for this. And
All
so
right.
we have come up with four different movies. I will not tell you what they are, but Tim is going to roll a die, and alphabetically that will just determine what we're going to watch next. So
No
let me
fooling,
get.
folks, right here as we're recording.
Yes, Tim said we should do this before, but I was like, no, it'll be more fun to do it when we record.
And he's right. So here we go.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
All right.
And it's a four.
And it's a four. Okay, so that puts us with Memento. So we are sticking
Ooh.
with the crime element, and we're following along with that, and we're going to watch Christopher Nolan's Memento. There are two versions of this if you want to watch. We will watch the theatrical version, not the not backwards version that exists as a special feature. And that is, I believe, what it is. It is not really can supposed to be an alternate take as so much as a special feature. So
Yeah.
that we will have that done some point in August. So look out for that. But our next episode that you should get in your ears after this will be continuing our back in summertime series, and that will be Groundhog Day.
Yeah. Bill Murray, Andy McDowell, lots of fun.
Yeah.
But for right now, that's our show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Have I made myself clear, boss?
Yeah, that's perfectly clear, Mickey, yeah. Just give me 1 minute to confer with my colleague. Did you understand a single word of what he just said?